In the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
How dare you?
Welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Hi there, Mark Congleton here. I'm your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Al Sharpton is indeed absurd. I hope you're having a good day wherever or whenever you may be listening. If you're joining in on Facebook Live, hello, good to have you along for the ride today. If you're listening to the podcast version, thank you so much for joining in. I appreciate the fact that you're there and that you make this a part of your day. Thanks so everly muchly. Around our place, it's getting rainy again. And in the next few days, temperatures will be dropping. By this time next week, the high will be in the low 30s. That's what I've looked at, the extended forecast. Those are very hard to actually stick to because everything can change a lot in 7 days. But the long-range forecast for a week from today says the high will be, what, 33? And I know that if you're in Alaska, and I know that there's some in Alaska who are listening, I know that's nothing for you. My brother Bruce has been posting photos. There's like a Quickie Mart, you know, a convenience store that he posts the pictures of out front. They've got a thermometer. The other night it's minus 52. Yeah, wrap your brain around that. Minus 52. Holy smokes! And my brother chooses to live there. Well, he was stationed there in the Air Force. And he was always the outdoors kind of guy and loved the hunting and fishing. And as soon as he was able to, after he got out of the Air Force, he moved back there. And, well, if you want to get away from it all, move to Alaska. Because there's just nothing close to anything there. you have a small, select group of friends, and that's it. Wow. At any rate, going to be cold here in the next few days. Temperatures dropping throughout the week. And, of course, the Piggly Wiggly will be attacked. Bread and milk will disappear. People will fear snow, even if none is in the forecast. You know how that goes. It's going to be an interesting week. And it was an interesting day yesterday. We had all kinds of stuff happening, which we will dig into momentarily. But first, over to social media. A good friend of the Mark and Max show, Jenny Hoffman Ellison, she works with a race ministry. She's at Talladega. Doing that, or has been over the years doing a lot of work out there, and she posted a couple of things this morning that made me laugh. First up, when killing them with kindness doesn't work, try a hockey stick. Results may vary. Thanks, Jenny. I like that a lot. And then this one, which makes you go, the forest was shrinking, but the trees kept voting for the axe, for the axe was clever. And convinced the trees that because his handle was wood, he was one of them. There are some in our society who could learn from that. You keep voting for the axe, and you have been voting for the axe for over 50 years. And nothing gets better in spite of the axe's promises and assurances to you. I don't know if you caught this, but have a listen.
President of the United States and the First Lady.
This was at the Clemson LSU National Championship game last night. The crowd is going insane. There's a mixture of chants going on. Four more years, USA. You can hear the drum corps. This is how real America feels about their chief. This is how real Americans, true patriots, feel about the President of the United States. Unlike the Beltway insiders at that baseball game in D.C. a few months back, listen to that, as they joined the line right before everything went quiet. It intensified. This is how America real heartland America feels about the President of the United States. This is something to hold on to, something to remember. When the news media is telling you that this man is hated, this is something to remember. When Democrat politicians tell you this man is destroying this country, the country doesn't believe them. So you shouldn't believe them either. Remember this. When he makes a public appearance, unless it's in a liberal stronghold like Washington, D.C., the crowd goes wild. This man draws thousands of people to public appearances whenever he appears across the country. I saw a picture yesterday of the crowd waiting for John Kerry to speak at a Joe Biden event. There were chairs in the room. It looked like maybe five people. A tiny room. Lots of Biden signage. Five people in the chairs. Nobody on the stage. I think there may have been 20 chairs total. A Trump event. Standing room only, thousands of people outside watching video screens. America is behind their president. The progressives are out of touch with America. That is something you need to remember. Just remember. And speaking of being out of touch, you know, the other day we talked about, just kind of mentioned for a moment that Cardi B, the singer, who, whenever I see her on TV, my wife gives me a sharp look because the word whore comes out of my mouth. Cardi B, the other day, recently, said she was going to move to Nigeria. She had applied for Nigerian citizenship because Trump is destroying America. Well, she's kind of changed her tune. Now she's considering running for Congress. Really? This woman, who at one time was, she was an exotic dancer, let's just put it that way. She was a stripper. She used to also go on dates with men who obviously had money. She would drug their drinks, steal their money, and leave them alone in hotel rooms. That's Cardi B. She's now considering running for Congress. But when you think about it, she's used to stealing from the people, so she's got that going for her. She apparently meets the IQ requirement. I mean, we already have AOC. How much lower can the bar go? So, she meets the IQ requirement and the moral standard. She should run as a Democrat. Cardi B for Congress. That would be a hoot, don't you think? Come on. Cardi B for Congress. Oh, she's the perfect politician. She's already a thief. She's already a criminal. She's already an idiot. She's the perfect Democrat candidate. Cardi B for Congress. And we're not the only people that have problems with our politics and people in high places. Right now in the UK, you know, Prince Harry and his wife, Meghan Markle, they're talking about leaving the royal family. They had a family meeting the other day. The Queen is not happy.
We are not amused.
And she's basically laid down the law for them. They're going to get off out from under mom's skirts and move along. And live on their own. They got to have a way to produce some income. That'll be interesting to see what happens there. But Meghan Markle has decided, no, I don't want to go back to the U.S. Not until Trump leaves office. The Daily Mail reported Sunday Prince Harry and Markle, the Duke of and Duchess of Sussex, plan to live in Canada first. Their dream, though, is to have a home and a business in the California city where her mother still lives. Unnamed friends told this to the Daily Mail. On Wednesday, the couple shocked the world by announcing on Instagram they would step back as senior members of the British royal family and split their time between North America and the UK. The BBC reported senior royals were hurt, disappointed, and very upset by the decision. By Friday, Meghan had already decamped to Canada, where she once filmed the TV show Suits, to be with her son. Her spokeswoman told reporters this. She was widely reported to be fed up with the negative UK media coverage of her, which Prince Harry once condemned as having racial undertones. Of course it had to be racist! In her actress days before meeting Prince Harry, Markle openly bashed Trump. In a 2016 appearance on Comedy Central, she called the then Republican candidate divisive and misogynistic. She threatened to move to Canada if he won the 2016 election. Markle missed Trump's first state visit to the UK last June while on maternity leave with her son. During a pre-trip Oval Office interview, a Sun reporter asked Trump if he was aware of Markle's critical comments about him, and the president's response caused a media frenzy. But I didn't know that. No, I didn't know that. No, I hope she's okay. I did not know that. No, I didn't know she was nasty. Trump later called the reports that he had personally attacked Markle fake news. He tweeted, "I never called Meghan Markle nasty, made up by the fake news media, and they got caught cold." Will CNN, New York Times, and others apologize? Doubt it. A source told the Mail Sunday that the royal couple's move to L.A. was by no means an immediate thing. The source said, "But there's a long-term plan to end up back in the U.S. with a second home in Canada, where they will also spend a great deal of time." They want to move to L.A. This is their first big problem, as far as I can tell. Well, okay, aside from the glaringly obvious problem that Meghan Markle's a moron. Oh, and just an aside note here. Prince Harry is so far from the throne, there are so many people who would have to die in tragic accidents before he would qualify. I mean, there are children, little children in line before him for the throne, okay? So this is not like this is somebody who actually had a chance to sit on the throne anyway. Anyway, back to California. Meghan obviously is in charge here. She wants to move back to California to be near her Hollywood friends. And in order to live in California, you have to be making a lot of money for your life not to be negatively affected. The taxes are crazy. The cost of everything is insane. The laws are just nuts. In San Francisco and L.A., honestly, you'd better have incredible security around your home if you have money, because the homeless and the crazy and all of the negative elements that are getting larger and larger are going to make your life crazy there. So the fact that they want to move to the Los Angeles area should tell you they're not connected very firmly to reality, that they are so isolated from real life that they don't understand that in the real world, people don't live that way and don't want to live near that. Do you? No, you don't. I don't. I don't even want to visit there. My wife and I, and I've talked about this a few times, we've been trying to plan a vacation, a getaway. We have an opportunity, and one of the places that we looked at going was Southern California. We've also looked at Northern California, or further north in San Francisco. We've looked at areas there because they're places that we've been able to visit briefly, but would like to go back and spend more time and just explore and take in. But the way things are going in California today, I'm not all that hot about going there anymore. I'm just not. I have friends who live in California. I have some acquaintances who live in the LA area, Hollywood area. And life for them, hey, it's just life. But there are those who don't live in the hotbeds of leftist insanity who, when I post things about California online, they'll say, "Yep, it's crazy here." So I'm not really sure we want to spend our money there in California. for a vacation. But Meghan Markle wants to move back there? What's the motivation? The motivation is the movie industry, the television industry, and her friends in it, and her disconnect from the real world. She doesn't live in it anymore. She lives in that little echo chamber of leftism and progressivism, which was, for her, the entertainment business. And speaking of business, what are they going to do to make money? I'm pretty sure Prince Harry can get on a board of directors someplace with the right pull. Maybe Prince Harry should call Joe Biden and see if Hunter can get him on the board of directors of some company somewhere. Now that's an idea that may float. Hey, somebody tell Prince Harry to get in touch with Joe. Creepy Uncle Joe can help. He really can.
Sell crazy someplace else. We're all stocked up here.
Well, fine. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Thank you so much for being there and making this part of your day. And thanks for sharing it with your friends. Remember, you can send your friends to dailyperspectivepodcast.com. You could also go to the Facebook page, just search for Daily Perspective. And you can find the podcast hosted by Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify. You can find it on the iHeart Radio app. And you can find it at TuneIn Radio. And a lot of people have iHeart Radio or TuneIn Radio on their mobile devices so they can listen to their favorite radio shows. Well, this is right in there. Just look under podcasts and search for The Daily Perspective. You'll find it right there. You can also set it up so that it will notify you every time a fresh one drops, which is every day, Monday through Friday. And what was that other thing? Oh, there's something else. I know I'll think of it again. It's been derailed. It's out of my brain. Because the ludicrousy continues. Okay. I mentioned yesterday Oscar nominations were out. People were talking about who and what was being nominated for Academy Awards. And because I tend to shut things out of my brain that I think are just stupid, I had just totally and completely shoved off the table the fact that Barack and Michelle Obama are behind some entertainment things now. They have the Netflix deal. They have other things going on, right? Well, there's a Netflix documentary produced by the Obamas called American Factory. It has predictably been nominated for an Oscar for Best Documentary. And Obama tweeted, "Glad to see American Factory's Oscar nod for Best Documentary. It's the kind of story we don't see often enough, and it's exactly what Michelle and I hope to achieve with Higher Ground." Now, Higher Ground is the name of the Obamas' production company. Last year, they were accused of deplorable behavior over a trademark dispute over the name of the company. He also adds, "Congrats to the incredible filmmakers and entire team." American Factory, which debuted on Netflix back in August, was the Obamas' first project under Higher Ground Productions and follows the story of a closed General Motors plant that's bought and reopened by a Chinese billionaire. It has a 75% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, a 97% critics score. That tells you a little bit right there. 97% critics score. These are liberals, progressives, leftists in the industry who see everything through that progressive lens. The 75% audience score, well, that's three quarters of the people who saw it said, yeah, it's okay. But the critics loved it. Now, I've never watched this documentary. It's hard to believe, though, that this documentary would have earned this nomination had the Obamas not been attached to it. Barack Obama has already won 2 Grammy Awards for Best Spoken Word Album. And Michelle Obama was recently nominated in the same category for her memoir, Becoming. So you can pretty much bet they're going to win. If you look at the nominations and winners in that category, you'll find a lot of Democrat politicians and pundits have a knack for scoring nominations and winning the Grammy in that category. Their conservative counterparts, not even noticed. Nominees for Best Spoken Word Album include Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Jimmy Carter, Al Franken, and Jesse Jackson. All of them won at least once. But back to the Obamas. Barack Obama was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize within a month or so of taking office and ultimately won the award over several other more appropriate choices. His victory was so ill-considered that the secretary of the Nobel Peace Prize Committee, Geir Lundestad, regrets Obama being given the award. He was given the Nobel Peace Prize. And then he went on to strike with the military, with drones, almost 3,000 times. The bottom line is, like many Democrats, the Obamas have a history of winning awards just on their names and politics, rather than for any objective merit. Having their names attached to this documentary certainly gave it an advantage over the countless documentaries produced last year. So just because their name is attached to it, this was nominated. It is loved by the leftist progressive echo chamber critics. And God love them, they'll probably win. Did you hear all the kerfuffle about Elizabeth Warren? She's confirmed the story now that Bernie Sanders told her a woman can't win the presidency. Yesterday, CNN broke news that Bernie Sanders told Elizabeth Warren that he didn't think a woman could win the 2020 election. This report quoted 4 sources, people in the room at the time of the purported conversation, which happened in December of 2018. Senator Sanders said the story was false. He said it's sad that 3 weeks before the Iowa caucus and a year after that private conversation, the staff who weren't in the room are lying about what happened, he said. He probably shouted it, though, you know. It's sad! Oh, gosh. He always seems so angry. No wonder he had a heart attack. Sanders' campaign manager, Faiz Shakir, urged Warren to speak out on the CNN report, said, I believe she'd come out and say, yeah, that's not my recollection of events. Of course, Bernie Sanders does not believe that. Well, now, Elizabeth Warren is speaking out about this story. Rather than correcting it, she's confirming the story. She's just released a statement verifying that Sanders did indeed tell her a woman couldn't win the presidency. Here we have a bit of her statement. Bernie and I met for more than 2 hours in December 2018 to discuss the 2020 election, our past work together, and shared goals. Among the topics that came up was what would happen if Democrats nominated a female candidate. I thought a woman could win. He disagreed. I have no interest in discussing this private meeting any further because Bernie and I have far more in common than our differences on punditry. The Sanders campaign, understandably, is not happy. They say the timing of this clearly shows that this is a desperate move, one senior Sanders aide said to NBC News. Unfortunately, Elizabeth Warren's campaign has been going down in the polls, and this is the latest in an attack on one of her leading competitors. The war of words between the two progressive campaigns began over the weekend when Politico reported that the Sanders campaign had been giving volunteers talking points, describing Warren as the candidate of elites. Warren on Sunday said she was disappointed by the campaign's actions. She told NBC News, I was disappointed to hear that Bernie is sending his volunteers out to trash me. Well, it's 3 weeks before the Iowa caucus. It's just a matter of, we're, less than 21 days away from the first big decision poll? We're the first. Of course, they're going to start attacking each other. They're going to line leaders up, the people at the highest points in the polls up. They're going to line them up in their sights and start squeezing off shots. That's the way things happen. It's a political campaign. Of course, they're going to be after each other at this point. And of course, afterwards, they're all going to have a drink together and laugh about it. This is politics. This is how this works. And let me just say, if I can approach this from sort of a human nature perspective, I can imagine, considering the backgrounds of both these people and their worldviews, that conversation, more honestly, was that Bernie said he didn't believe in today's environment, in the current state of affairs in America today, he didn't believe that a woman would be elected. Why? Sexism, of course. This is the leftist outcry. Remember, when a woman doesn't win, it's always sexism. It's not the fact that she has no platform to stand on. It's not the fact that she's promising things she can't deliver. It's not the fact that she's unappealing to the vast majority of Americans for many reasons which have nothing to do with her gender. It has to be sexism. And honestly, that's what I see happening in this conversation. And now we see Elizabeth Warren coming out and twisting the meaning of that conversation to suit her political ends. Remember, Elizabeth Warren is a leftist, which means she's a liar. There's a lot of stuff messed up today, kids. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host. Wow. Why did I choose to yawn at that particular moment? Wow. You know, this rainy weather that we're having here, I just want a nap. You know what I mean? I just want a nap all the time. Can we just have a nap time? Could we please? Probably not. Oh, my gosh. Hey, if you've been watching the news, bless your heart. I mean, that's why I encourage you every Friday to unplug for the weekend. Because, wow, if you watch especially the mainstream news media, it's depressing. It really is. Considering the fact that 93% negative when it comes to President Trump. And 3/4 of it is impeachment news. That's according to the folks over at the Media Research Council and Newsbusters. In the first 100 days since House Democrats began their impeachment push on September 24th, ABC, CBS, and NBC have aggressively aided their effort. A Media Research Center analysis finds the big three evening newscasts have battered the president with 93% negative coverage and promoted impeachment at the expense of nearly all other Trump news. At the same time, the broadcast networks donated at least 124 hours of wall-to-wall live coverage as they preempted regular programming in favor of House Democrat-led impeachment activities. On the other hand, the network's frenzy over impeachment has meant the Democratic presidential candidates have been barely visible on the evening newscasts, even though voting is due to begin in just 3 weeks. During impeachment, the networks kept up the same relentless negativity toward President Trump that they first displayed during the 2016 presidential campaign. From September 24th through January 1st, the folks at MRC tallied 1,053 evaluative comments about the president, 93% of which were negative. It's pretty clear by now that reporters aren't going to reward the president with much good press, even for obvious achievements such as the strong economy or the victory over ISIS terrorists in Syria, including the killing of their elusive leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. In fact, the press is denying. You know, you look at the pundits on the news now, and they're they talk about all the strong economy talk being fake news. They say it's not true when the evidence is overwhelming. But impeachment has increased the sheer amount of this negative coverage, as well as meant even less airtime for the administration's policy achievements. In the first 100 days since Pelosi announced the start of the House impeachment inquiry on September 24th through January 1st, ABC, CBS, and NBC have generated a combined 849 minutes of evening news coverage about the subject. For comparison, after Special Counsel Robert Mueller was named back on May 17th of 2017, it took those same newscasts more than twice as long to register the same amount of airtime for the Russia investigations. In other words, the networks are spending more than twice as much airtime on the Ukraine probe as they did on the Russia probe. The evening news resources being poured into the Ukraine impeachment coverage, which alone accounts for nearly three-fourths, that's 74.3% of all their Trump coverage, left little time for other topics. During these 100 days, there's been paltry coverage of the president's handling of North Korea and immigration, both of those major topics in the past. The administration's trade talks with China were given just over 6 minutes of coverage during these 100 days. While the successful effort to get the USMCA trade deal through the House received a scant 66 seconds of airtime. Total coverage of the administration's economic program, just 9 minutes, or barely 1% of the airtime spent on impeachment. In an extraordinary step, the networks also preempted huge swaths of their regular programming for live coverage of House Democrats' impeachment activities, including several days of hearings in November and early December, and the not very suspenseful final floor vote on December 18th. Based on viewing of the network's Washington, D.C. area affiliates, NBC provided at least 44 hours and 32 minutes of live coverage outside of their regular news shows, including a whopping 10 hours on the day of the House vote. ABC and CBS were close behind, offering more than 40 and 39 hours of live coverage, respectively. Such unusual coverage aims to build up the significance of the event in the viewer's mind, suggesting an historic moment on par with the Kennedy assassination or 9/11. Not a futile partisan exercise. But Nielsen ratings showed the public didn't seem interested with the hearings conducted by the House Intelligence Committee. And polls collected by Real Clear Politics indicated all of this coverage might have actually hurt the Democrats' efforts. On November 12th, the day before the hearings began, a slight plurality favored impeaching and removing the president, 49% to 47%. By December 19th, that's the day after the House vote to impeach, those figures had flipped, 48 opposed to 47 in favor. While that's obviously not a big shift, the polls show that the massive publicity push of hearings and live events did absolutely nothing to bring any new support to the Democrats' side. Even though there seems to be essentially no chance that impeachment will actually remove Donald Trump from office, the publicity surrounding the House Democrats' efforts has starved their party's presidential candidates of mainstream media attention. While the ABC, CBS, and NBC evening newscasts spent 1,143 minutes covering President Trump, the top Democrat, former Vice President Joe Biden, got a mere 107 minutes of coverage. And most of that, 78 minutes of it, consisted of references to the investigations of Biden and his son, Hunter, that the president talked about in his phone call with the president of Ukraine. Biden's actual campaign was barely noted. Just 29 minutes. That's about 1/40th of the total time spent on Trump. Other top Democrats were just as invisible. Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg. He got 30 minutes of network attention as he entered the race in November. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders each got about 24 minutes of airtime. Most of Sanders' coverage was of his recovery from a heart attack back in October. Pete Buttigieg, now the former mayor of South Bend, Indiana, who vaulted to the top of the polls in Iowa and New Hampshire during the past 100 days, got a meager 7 minutes, 43 seconds of evening news coverage during this period. while Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar managed just 5 minutes of airtime. Apart from horse race statements about each candidate standing in the race, not counted in the positive-negative spin score from MRC, there were too few evaluative statements of the Democratic candidates to report individual statistics. But the four candidates at the top of the polls during this period, that's Biden, Sanders, Warren, and Buttigieg, together received 31 positive statements versus 26 negative statements for a combined score of 54% positive press. As for President Trump, evening news viewers heard 72 positive statements versus 981 negative statements during that same period, a 93% negative spin score. While most citizens want their media to be even-handed in their coverage of candidates, the networks seem poised to be as lopsidedly negative in their coverage of Trump's 2020 campaign as they have been in their coverage of his presidency. As I keep telling you, day after day after day, you can't trust the mainstream news. Their negative focus on the President of the United States goes in direct contrast. It is in direct contrast
the President to this. Of the United States and the First Lady.
The news media echo chamber, the bubble, keeps repeating the same negativity. They keep focusing on the negative. They keep giving airtime to anything and everything they can spin to the negative about President Trump. And it is backfiring. Now, because they're progressives, they'll never acknowledge the fact that this is backfiring. They'll never acknowledge the fact that America doesn't share their view, and that these people are paying attention and getting their news from alternative sources because the news media is out of touch with real Americans. And I tell you every day, get out there, find the news, find other sources. Don't trust CNN, don't trust MSNBC, ABC, NBC, CBS. You can't trust these people because they live in this echo chamber, in this bubble. They're overwhelmingly, the networks are overwhelmingly populated by leftists, progressives, people who have a certain view of the world around them, and they see it through the lens of progressivism. They don't live in the real world. They don't operate in the real world. They don't really produce anything which helps the real world keep moving forward. They just see everything from their viewpoint. And they don't recognize the fact that America disagrees with them. In fact, the news media agrees with Hillary Clinton that about half of America is a bunch of deplorable people. So they, like the progressive politicians, not only don't like President Trump or conservatives in general in politics, they don't like you. And that opinion is reflected in the comments below news articles. If you ever want to waste a few minutes and get really angry, just read the comments below a CNN news piece. And you'll see the overwhelming hatred being spewed by progressives, by leftists, by liberals. The hatred being spewed toward people who don't see things through the same lens they do. You want to talk about intolerance? Intolerance is on display every day in the comments below articles. I encourage you, if you never have looked at that, to actually look at it. But don't waste a lot of time on it, because that reflects the opinions of a tiny number of people who are extremely angry about everything, and for some reason enjoy being upset about life.
I want details, and I want them right now.
And that's why I'm here. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Speaking of the leftist press, there's another article from Newsbusters about a reporter from the New York Times. And you know, the New York Times is so heavily slanted, and it has been for a long, long time. And people have it's been a slow progression, but people eventually have been waking up to the fact that the New York Times is just extremely leftist. And Maggie Haberman's a good example. While journalists live in their own media echo chamber most of the time, occasionally they get a healthy dose of reality when they share their self-aggrandizing opinions on social media. And that happened to New York Times reporter Maggie Haberman over the weekend when she was whining about President Trump defending Iranian journalists and protesters against their totalitarian government. As Iran reacted violently against protesters of the regime over the weekend, President Trump called on Iran's leaders to let journalists roam free. He also warned Iran to stop killing protesters. Just this past November, 1,500 protesters were reportedly killed and 7,000 people arrested. Still, the media downplayed these anti-regime protests because they fly in the face of the liberal media's narrative that by killing Qasem Soleimani, Trump united Iran. New York Times White House correspondent Maggie Haberman showed just how sensitive journalists are to President Trump's criticism of their poor reporting. In a tweet to Trump, she tried to equate how he calls the press the enemy of the people to Iran's Islamic Republic jailing and torturing critical journalists. On January 12th, she snarked at the president, "Let reporters roam free," says the president, who routinely refers to U.S. press as enemy of the people to Iranian leaders. That hot take wasn't received well. Mockery ensued, critics asking Haberman to list how many journalists Trump had jailed or tortured. And you see, that is the thing, is that President Trump calls the press the enemy of the people under a condition. And that condition is when they don't tell the truth. That condition is when they slant stories to suit an agenda. And when the press does that, they are doing a disservice to the people. They aren't providing a service to the people, a necessary service to the people. They are harming this discourse that we have in America by publishing information which isn't true, which isn't factual, which is slanted, either by preference or any other reason. And so she tries to equate, Maggie Haberman tries to equate what happens to journalists in Iran to what happens to journalists in America. And what happens to journalists in America is the president just says, "Well, I'm not talking to you. You're fake news. You're the enemy of the people. You won't tell the truth." He just says that for everyone to hear. But in Iran, if Maggie Haberman reported the truth about the mullahs, Maggie Haberman would disappear. There is no correlation. There is no similarity. There is no way you can compare the two. But because progressives love victimhood, Maggie Haberman and others like her are victims. Bless their hearts. And speaking of progressive behavior, let's go to Wisconsin, shall we? A Wisconsin judge has found that the state's election commission and three of its members are in contempt of court. Found them in contempt of court yesterday, or on Monday for yesterday for refusing to comply with his court order. And that court order was to remove more than 200,000 individuals from the voter rolls there. Judge Paul Malloy fined the commission $50 a day until it begins removing people from the rolls, and is fining those three Democratic members who fought his previous order, Ann Jacobs, Julie Glancy, and Mark Thompson, each of them $250 a day, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And just between you and me, the commission should have been fined about $500 a day. Malloy said, I can't be any clearer than this. They need to follow the order. They need to follow my order. In December, Malloy ordered the immediate removal of individuals from voter rolls who were flagged as having potentially moved and who subsequently failed to respond within 30 days to a deactivation notice sent by the Elections Commission. These are people, to be clear, that they haven't heard back from, that have not confirmed that they still live there or that they're still alive. These are people who they have attempted to contact and tried to confirm that they are still eligible to vote there, and they aren't hearing back from them. They've been given ample time, so let's clean these people off the rolls. In December, Malloy ordered the immediate removal of individuals from voter rolls who were flagged, having potentially moved, subsequently failed to respond within 30 days to a deactivation notice. In October, the deactivation notice had been sent to 234,000 residents. By the end of the year, 209,000 voters had yet to respond, asking for their voter status to be continued. But the Election Commission, made up of three Democrats and three Republicans, has been deadlocked and has failed to comply with the court order. Cleaning up the voter rolls in the state had become a partisan issue, with Democrats in the key battleground state fearing that a voter roll purge would hurt their chances of defeating President Donald Trump in the 2020 presidential election. You see, Trump won that state in 2016 by just over 20,000 votes. Pretty slim margin. They're afraid that purging the voter rolls of these people who aren't responding, who aren't acknowledging that they live there, who aren't asking to be, oh yeah, please continue to count me as relevant here. If they're not there, what's the harm? If they don't live in Wisconsin anymore, they're not responding, they've had time to get back in touch. And I would probably bet that there is a provision that if they show up at their voting place and they aren't on the list, that they can still cast a provisional vote. What's the harm? Unless someone's using those names and addresses to sway the vote. Republicans have argued that removing the voters is necessary, a necessary measure aimed at eliminating fraud. This way, the voter rolls would not be full of people who should not be voting. In late December, Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, a conservative law firm, filed a lawsuit against the commission asking Judge Malloy to fine the commission in contempt and fine its members. And he has. As a result of the new ruling, the commission is set to meet again on today, in fact, to decide whether to begin removing people from the rolls, a process that takes about 3 days. Ann Jacobs, one of the Democratic commission members, maintains that Judge Malloy's initial findings are incorrect and desires to continue appealing the court order. She said, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, if we're going to treat voting as the central component of our democracy, we need to be far less cavalier about taking people off the rolls. Well, first off, it's a republic. And if they don't live in your state anymore, they can't vote in your state anymore. One of the issues that we've seen happen again and again is people voting more than once, where they have moved and they still have, their names are still on the voting roll in the state they moved from, as well as on the rolls in the state they moved to. And so they vote in their new home state and then go vote in their old home state. That does happen, and people have been charged with it. So they're trying to clean the voter rolls up to make things legal in Wisconsin, and the Democrats are fighting it. That's not even something that makes you go hum. It's one of those things that makes you say, huh, crooks.
Oh, we're done.